Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed, and this particular episode is the Bad Batch Report. That is wonderful. Sometimes we have exciting drums. Sometimes we have forlorn horns coming from Ken to celebrate the beginning of the episode. Today we have the rhythmic sighs of Crosshair.
That's pretty much it. Some of the best I've seen in Star Wars.
This was some phenomenal emotionally repressed acting. Some of the best deep meaning coming from small grumbles and which absolutely can be music. I invite anyone to take the noises that Ken made and set them to a beat. And we can have Crosshair's dance party.
Indeed. Crosshair's dance party. Set it to song, The Ballad of
The Ballad of Anyway, I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and the person recording the tracks for Crosshair's dance party is Ken Nabsock. It was good to have some fun at the top of the podcast, because that's over, right? This episode could not be farther from Crosshair's dance party. We joke. We will have fun while discussing a beautifully brutal episode of The Bad Batch. It is episode 12 of season 2, entitled The Outpost, double directed by Nathaniel Villanueva and Brad Rao. Continuing story editor credit to Matt Machenovitz. This episode, written by the head writer herself, Jennifer Corbett. So you know it's a special one. Ken, any reaction to those credits?
Look, Matt Machenovitz, just the MVP of the season, man. I don't think we spend this much time talking about story editors, unfortunately, in my life, which is maybe a shame, but it's important stuff. You got to take all this, put it together, streamline it. I love it. And Jennifer Corbett, glad to see her name on that. Yeah, I don't know how that came about. I don't know if she was like, look, I need this one. I got this one to tell, or whatever it was, but, good stuff. And the two directors make sense with one of the scenes kind of there at the end. Perhaps that's where the divide was. But anyways, all that to say, I love these names. I love this team. I really do. They just got this awesome all-star team forming on the Bad Batch. I love it.
Yeah, it really is an all-star team. Like we've said in previous weeks, a ton of long-standing Star Wars animation veterans with some fresh new voices, and just always wanting to highlight that Jennifer Corbett is the head writer. Obviously, Dave Filoni credited up and down for getting the ball rolling on this. Still involved, obviously, but sometimes you see those tweets or headlines of Dave Filoni's Bad Batch, and like, yeah, yes and no. And I think you and I both agree that we really enjoyed season one, but season two has really been something special and different. So really wanting the people who are making it special and different to get the credit for that.
I really agree with that. I'm getting to the point. It goes against some of the stuff we talk about here at Force Center of just, you know, everyone, you know, loved Star Wars in your own way. But I'm getting close to being like, Bad Batch is my favorite Star Wars show, and I'll get to deal with it. But spiritually it is, but I love all Star Wars, of course, but clearly, but I just, every week, this is that music cue hits the beginning and I'm just ready for the journey.
Nothing wrong with having a favorite, having a one that you're enjoying the most. And I think in some ways, Bad Batch is the one that is surprising me the most right now. I think that's what's really alluring about it, is the ideas are well constructed. Each episode is well constructed, and the season has been veering from these celebrations of the joy that you can still find in dark times of here's how to get through a dark time. Hey, you know what? Sometimes the real treasure is community and discovery. Mm-hmm. And then some episodes, it's just like, would you like to go through absolute hell with a character? Here you go. And that power of not knowing which you're going to experience makes it kind of thrilling every time I click the button on our screeners, which we are TM lucky to have.
As always, though, that time is running out. I'm with you on that. I love the journey. I love the surprise every week. And there's just something about season two. It's just been hitting all the right notes, including the sad, somber ones.
Some sad, somber notes in this one. So what was your viewing experience when you did click the button and enter into mystery? When did you do that?
Last week and again this morning, and I've been having fun kind of after you and I record, whipping up whatever probably unhealthy lunch I'm having and sitting down and just kind of watching it while it's fresh. Right. And, but then the downside is you have to sit with it for a week. Mm-hmm. And you want to scream to the heavens, this is what it's about, Crosshair.
Yeah, exactly. I had a similar experience. We did our Mando report. And I really just wanted to watch the next episode of Bad Batch. I was just in a Star Wars mood and I was like, hey, I got more Star Wars and I need to get a jump on preparing this discussion review. So I watched it right after we recorded our Mandalorian report. I had some leftover pasta. So I had a bleak afternoon of pasta and trauma I watched this really powerful episode.
It's comforting food. You might need that.
Yeah, no, it was good. It was good. I needed the comfort of my old friend Cheese as I watched this devastating episode. So what was your overall reaction to the episode? I get the vibe that you loved it. Is that wrong? Where'd you go?
I wrote down these words. Hot damn, I loved this one. Really did, man. I consider this one almost a short film, something of its own. It's so tied to everything. It leads us places, of course, but it just... the vibe, the presentation. We talk about the music. It's another win for the music from the opening notes. Just some of the best yet in the series, and Clone Wars, Rebels, and Star Wars. Obviously, no disrespect to John Williams. Got some John Williams content coming out here on the channel. I don't want anyone to assume that, but we talk about Kevin Kiner a lot, but I still think we could talk about him more. And I think the mood, everything about it, just those opening notes, I was like, oh, this isn't good. This isn't going to be a fun, chipper episode. And I think we needed it. And I'll say this, I have loved what they've done with Crosshair. And that includes the fact that we haven't spent a ton of time with him this season. And I personally like that. I don't know if that's for everyone. I haven't seen a lot of hashtag where's Crosshair. You know, maybe I missed it. I don't know. I apologize for those fans. But I just think there's something powerful about what they've done with him, separated him, isolated him. In another way, you could, I mentioned this before, but you could have him, he's the one chasing him down every week. He knows the inside and he's angry. Even the big change that might be starting to happen with him and the big change he went through in this episode could have been more directly tied where, you know, the Hunter's going, but we were friends, man. It's not that they're separated. He's separated from those who probably, you know, the only ones who love and care for him as a Crosshair versus a clone designation number. And there's some talk about some of the themes of change and how I think some change can be, you know, pushed along a little bit more effectively. And it's Crosshair's journey and seeing it and seeing him by himself. We talk about his oomphs and all that stuff. One of my favorite little moments in Bad Batch so far this year is him throwing like the toothpick on the ground as he's getting on the shuttle. And there was just so much in that. It was kind of almost a stereotypical like soldier in a movie, like a cigarette on the ground. But there's just something about it. I just absolutely loved it. And so therefore I'm here for the journey across here, but glad that we haven't spent every week with him because it makes these episodes sing even more for me.
Yeah, no, I really agree. I think there could have been a version of this story where it was similar to what happened in the first season of he crossed paths with the Bad Batch multiple times and they kind of tried to understand his perspective. We tried to understand his. They tried to come together again. But what we get instead is something that we don't always get in Star Wars is someone that we're sympathetic to makes a decision that we, the audience, I think can read is not good for them, but they make it and they cling to it. And what we're getting to see with these two Crosshair episodes this season is getting to just see them sit and simmer and suffer in the bad choice that they made. So we get to feel it the way that they feel it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, very much so. Simmer. I like that word.
Yeah, a lot of simmering Crosshair in this one. And I agree that Kevin Kiner's music keeps being a highlight of these episodes because it's working so well with every other element. Last season of Bad Batch Report, we kept talking about how beautiful the animation is every episode to the point where we almost stopped. And then I had said, well, I tell my wife I love her every day. I can say every episode of Bad Batch has got beautiful animation. And I'm now going to transfer that to Kevin Kiner. If I can tell my wife I can love her every day, I can say every episode of our podcast that Kevin Kiner's music is amazing.
I think that's a valuable lesson for life, by the way.
That's right. Tell Kevin Kiner that you love his music every day. Maybe not. Anyway, point is, it's amazing. You wrote down Hot Damn, I Love It. I wrote in all caps, a brutal banger. it's so powerful. I think one of the things that has been really powerful this season, I've mentioned a couple times, is we keep having these stories that in terms of the actual plot point, the scope of travel, the beginning, the middle, and end, they're very simple, minimal, direct stories. But every choice of music, location, camera angle, voice acting, scenic design makes you feel the living hell out of it. And I think that's what I hear when you say it feels like a short film. It's this one idea explored to its absolute depth. And this was yet another one of these episodes. And this one to me was just not shying away at all from the absolute horror of the Empire, the absolute horror of what has been done to the clones. I think it, without being a direct riff on John Carpenter's The Thing, it really evokes John Carpenter's The Thing, of the frigid environment, the frigid base where there is a monster to be fought, but the monster turns everybody against one another. And it's one of those, you know, the monster becomes, hey, there's an actual person to be fought, a thing to be fought, but also even your allies are now to be fought. It's so isolating, so alone. Having grown up in the Midwest, in Minneapolis, which can get brutally hot, but also dangerously, you know, absolutely life-riskingly cold, I felt this episode. I have been frostbitten in real life. I have been close to frostbitten. I have had times where, you know, my mom had to, the heater went out, and if we stayed there, we would die. And we had to be bundled up and taken somewhere with only our eyes exposed. And even then, you could start to feel the flesh around your eyes crust. Having had that experience in real life, oh, man, could I feel this episode. It was so well done to make you feel physically what Crosshair was going through.
Mm, physically, emotionally uncomfortable, isolated. I don't love what you're saying regarding that story. It would give you another blanket, but yeah, a feeling that any idea of the short film that it just, you know, it's one idea and explored it to its depths. I love what you said there, because that's just what I felt from the opening to the close, including the little, it's a big scene, but the scene at the end in a different location, all worked for me in that way.
Yeah, absolutely. It is so, so impactful. One other kind of big picture thing that this episode made me feel, and it's kind of about this episode, but about the Bad Batch in general, of just what an interesting journey the audience has been able to go on with the clones throughout the story of Star Wars. In Attack the Clones, you know, we don't get to know the clones, but the existence of the clones is a failure. It is the sad fist bang on the balcony of Bail Organa that we love. It is Padme's goal is to stop this escalation of violence, to stop there being an army, a grand army of the Republic. So we meet the clones as a failure, but it's not the clones' failure, right? It's Palpatine's, it's the galaxy's failure to allow Palpatine to do this. And then we get to meet them and get to know them in the Clone Wars animated series, and we get to know them as people, as individuals. We root for them. They do have victories. They do help people. But there's this giant asterisk where the entire time we know they are pawns trapped in a pointless, unjust war.
Yeah.
So by the time we get to Bad Batch, and the Bad Batch has broken away, we get to just root for them, truly and deeply be, without any caveats, on their side, you know? And I felt that way about Mayday in this episode.
Yeah, completely, completely. Yeah, I like that view of it there. You don't have to wrestle with the big things around them. They're there. They're going through even a transition we all could understand in our own lives, world, right? I didn't think the war would end. What am I without that? I didn't think about that. I didn't think about retirement. I didn't think about job change. I didn't think about any of this stuff. And who am I? Who am I is a big question through a lot of the clone conversations these days. And I love that.
Yeah. So let's get into those ideas that you're talking about. The big theme, the big ideas at stake in this beautiful, brutal episode. Where did you go with what the big ideas were for you?
I have no idea. I'll be honest with you. I have no idea. No, here's where I go. I there's a lot of ways you could analyze the Empire and the show continues to do that. It continues to expose it. And this one wasn't subtle about it. It didn't need to be subtle about it. That wasn't the point. Lieutenant Nolan represents so many things of the Empire's evil. But like you said earlier, it just made it all intimate and personal. So I summed it up for me of Crosshair finds the value in life. And maybe in his own life, this idea of, you know, he's brutal, but he's a survivor. They've had to. And you got the ice vultures, by the way. I love any creature with the word ice in front of it. representing that, they represent it. Could be, you could look at them as death lingering over you, too. But just they're referred to as these survivors at Mayday. I loved everything about that. And how he found the value in life. You know, there's a lot of things we can talk about too, about the why of the orders. We're good soldiers. We followed orders. We've heard that since episode one of the Bad Batch. That's one of the big things with Crosshair. But to finally analyze the why playing it against you're being replaced, and it's you're it, it, by the way, already were that gear'd been there, that gear been there for a year or so. So this mm-hmm. was happening. You didn't even know it. This Mayday didn't know it, and all that. But all of it coming down to this, Crosshair finds the value in life itself, the survival, his survival, Mayday's death, all that stuff, and that can drive you forward to a lot of big change, because he hasn't had that before. I pull the trigger. That's what I'm told to do. I don't care. I don't question it. I don't care if they die or live, just as long as my mission's completed. A mission's a mission, he says at the beginning of this. At the end of this, he has a completely different perspective.
Yeah, it is not just a mission anymore. Yeah, I love what you're saying. I think they're one of the ways that I broke down and want to spend some more time with it is this idea of, you know, what is your value? That I think there's some reawakening of what it means to be a soldier. I think there is some reawakening, exactly what you're saying, of just life has value. But I also wanted to spend a little bit of time here talking about the contrast to discovering that life has value, which is, for me, the theme I wrote down, maybe as being negative, is just death. How much the idea of death is all around him, which is, I think, what pushes him to finally reevaluate the value of life, the value of purpose, up to a point. I think that's part of what made me feel like this episode was really powerful, is it didn't shy away from all of these images of death, right? I think, you know, we've been introduced to Crosshair in the Bad Batch show as a symbol of somebody who is just refusing to bend, change, adjust, evolve, right? He's content with his life where he is a soldier. It's defined this way. He goes on missions. And even with all of the evidence being thrown in his face that that way of life is changing and you have to change, he just clings to what he has known. And this is the episode where it's finally almost literally impossible to cling to what he's known, because everything he's known is literally dead or metaphorically dead, right? The Republic, his bond with the Bad Batch, even Rampart, if Rampart was even a sliver of an ally, he's gone too. Everything is literally or metaphorically gone. I think that was, to me, like the great power of the revelation of they're doing all of this to protect stormtrooper gear. They're doing all this to protect the symbol of the clones are done, you know? He's clung so hard, right? He had made a big deal out of the chip was out, and he still made the choice himself,
right,
to define himself as a good soldier who follows orders. And you can go, wow, that's a really morally dubious decision when you're following orders is, you know, murdering innocent Jedi and Padawans and taking out Saw's early partisans and all that. So morally dubious choice. Then it's an isolating choice. He's rejected the Bad Batch. Nobody wants to sit with him at lunch, but okay, great. He can soldier on, right? He's isolated, morally dubious, but he can keep clinging on to this former life.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's like literally clinging to a metaphorical corpse. I said literally and metaphorically, but that way of life is just like, it's not good. But it's what I know, and I'm going to cling to it, and it rots in his arms this episode until all he's clinging to is stormtrooper soldiers, these, you know, skull-like visages of the truth that he's not wanted anymore. He's clinging to nothing. I thought that was really powerful.
Yeah, it goes to what you're saying of your own value, right? Find your worth, accept nothing less. That's great on a bumper sticker, but I think it's a long journey there. And there's fear in that, right? I think that's a lot of what you and I talk about, fear in terms of, you know, a lot of people in power, they want to sell fear. But just as an individual, you make a decision to change from that or reverse it. There's a lot of fear, a lot of shame, a lot of confusion, it's the Kylo Ren of it all. Like, I can't go back. You can't go back. So destroy what's in the past. It's easier. And I think all that stripped away, he's left with nothing but his choice staring at him. I love that you brought in the image of him eating alone, right? Such a big image. It's just such, such a thing, man. And I think so far it's just been like, I didn't change. They did.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Where's that getting you?
Yeah. And yeah, and he's not really wanted to reckon with the fact that the Republic changed the Empire. Like Cody tries to kind of say that changed. And he's like, nah, I don't want to deal with that. Right. And that's what's so powerful about all of the symbolism of this episode, which is, you know, pretty straightforward. But I think what's so powerful about it is it's the emotional, it's making the emotional real and physical, right? Of he can keep lying to himself, lying to Bad Batch, lying to Cody, that things haven't changed. He can cling to something. And we all know what it's like to try to cling to something when when it's over.
Yeah.
You know, I think most of us have experienced that. You know, a friend group has moved on, or, you know, a restaurant changed owners, and you kind of try to cling to it. But the thing you actually loved isn't there anymore. And we are made to feel that of he's telling himself this lie. He's surrounded by clone troopers being forcefully sent off to space Florida to be retired against their will. Right. he's surrounded by stormtroopers, the new version that are replacing him. And then he's sent to a planet that just is death. It's a cold, almost lifeless morgue. An ice vulture is circling above. The mines are underfoot. Death is above. Death is below. Your replacement is at your side. And the cargo you're chasing isn't even low value. It's a paper saying, bleep you. We don't want you anymore.
Yeah.
I know you're trying to cling to us, but bleep off.
Yeah.
You're gone. You're done. Mm-hmm. Being so surrounded by physical evidence that you're clinging to nothing. It was so powerful.
Yeah. And I think this goes into some of the stuff in my head about change is often a very long journey. It's not, it doesn't necessarily come out of a debate that can harden you. I think there's been moments where I've seen Crosshair just be real hardened. I like that you say he just doesn't want to face it. And I go back to some of the stuff, Tech and Omega we're talking about, and Echo and everything. I'm just like, we all have to make our own decisions. Crosshair made his. Mm-hmm. And we've got, that's what he's got to do. And I think, so as someone who tries to tackle change in a way I didn't used to, and I'm still very stubborn, I'll order the same food at a restaurant or drive the same way and blah, blah, blah. But as someone who's tried to change overall, I think that the change in me was feeling a little isolated or looking around and going, I'm still here and I'm looking around and this ain't where I want to be. But that doesn't necessarily mean anyone can yell at me to get out of there. No one can put out their hand to pull me out. I gotta do it myself, and I gotta realize what's going on around me doesn't work for me anymore, and it happens in different ways. And so to tie it to that conversation with Omega, to now actually see this is why I like it isn't Hunter with his hand out going follow me, brother. I'm hugging you, brother. It's none of that, and that might come. Maybe that comes, but for right now, it's an ice vulture. Crosshair go, this ain't right, and I'm done. I'm done being in this wrong. For me, you know, for this part of my journey.
I love that you're saying that. I love that you're bringing up, you know, Omega and Tech's conversation, because Tech's perspective too is that, like, it's, you know, it's not that I am not bothered by change. I am. But the way that I wrestle with that is I accept that change is happening constantly and I have to adapt to it. I don't particularly enjoy it.
but for me,
it's an absolute reality. It's just factual, right? That these changes happen. So now are my three options to respond. And Tech's perspective that he, you know, expresses to Omega in that great episode, that great lagoon chat they have, is the dead opposite of where Crosshair has been, of like, I won't acknowledge the change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. to adapt to it, which is absolutely great and heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. But I do think he does, you know, change and reawaken a little bit in this episode. Yeah. I did want to ask you one death question.
Fire away.
It is, in fact, about firing away. This episode is this play between death and the possibility of responding to death and abandonment and, you know, dismissal by clinging to what is your actual value, clinging to a reassessment of life. So I do think there's an element of that. But when Nolan just brutally allows Mayday to die. And that ice vulture circles ahead. That's a moment of death to me where Crosshair is making this choice of be like, I'm finally been pushed too far. And we can talk about the positive angle of it. But he deals death to Nolan. And I wanted to ask you about this. I felt like that was one of those moments in a story where time slowed down. And as soon as Mayday died, I felt like an hour passed while I in my head said, shoot him. And I feel, I think this is sometimes why I like horror. I like dark things because it's a safe place to explore darker feelings. I don't feel great about that, but I want to be honest that I was like, shoot him, please shoot him. So I want to ask you how you felt about that moment. And if you were also in our beloved Star Wars that often preaches pacifism and community and connection, were you also wishing for the death of Lieutenant Nolan?
I was. I was with you on that. It's interesting. I do want to talk about the ice vultures and some of the meaning, the what I'm calling the anti-convores. Because I think there's this great moment earlier about them. They're survivors. They're this, they're that, but they survive. So, but that particular moment, I initially took it, and I think it might be in the ballpark where you're talking about, where he's looking up. He's like, Mayday's dead. This guy would have me die and not care because at least he can clear out a roster spot for a stormtrooper. And this vulture's just waiting to eat us all. Like, you know, and if he's a survivor, I've got to survive. And I think it's a danger. I don't want to sound like one of those yelling at clouds, but it's like, you know, you see a lot of just like, this isn't a moment that's endorsing Crosshair's actions. No. And I definitely don't think you're thinking that, but I think it's one of those moments. Yeah, definitely one of those moments of like, you know, analyzing how you get here, what do you do? And there could be some ramifications of that, or maybe not, because Nolan's probably not a character of consequence, right? He's just as expendable probably for his higher ups than that. So anyways, easy answer. Yeah, I was rooting for it. I was like, do it. I don't know if that's right, but I don't know what else he could have done. Cause I think he would have been left to die.
Yeah. No, I think so. I took the ice vulture is being multifaceted of, it is a symbol of death. Right. It is a symbol of being unrelenting. But there's something to be admired in that, in being unrelenting. And I think it's something where like Crosshair feels maybe some affinity for like, yeah, I'm like the vulture, you know, maybe people judge me or are afraid of me, but I do whatever it takes to survive and I admire it. And I think there's almost like that up there is a symbol of who I believe I am. And I'm just be left here to rot in the cold and be pecked apart by it. That's what this guy thinks my value is, Mayday's value, all clones. And it's a real breaking point, you know? And we can talk more about exactly what breaks Crosshair in that moment. But I think the episode was well constructed to just make me, obviously, there's nothing subtle about Nolan being set up to make you absolutely dislike Nolan, right?
Not a lot of gray in Nolan, yeah.
We were not presented with any gray. Mm-hmm. So I think I wanted to be honest about it, about how I felt about it, because I don't endorse it. I don't admire it or want to replicate that in real life at all. I think it's the power of story that it can sometimes be a pressure release mechanism for behavior that you are tempted by, but don't want to do in real life. And I think so many of us are struggling in the real world and we are pushed too far.
Yeah.
And this episode was so well done to show somebody being pushed too far and taking a step that I don't endorse, that I don't want to do in real life, even as a metaphor, lashing out in anger. But it was cathartic to watch because I think so many of us are under a huge amount of pressure and feel like we're being pushed too far. And to see somebody pushed too far and just be like, I don't even care what happens to me, but you got to go, was was bleak but powerful.
Yeah, no, this is a friend had asked me, hey, you know, what's the next Bad Batch about? I said, it's just dark. It's just dark. There's a line, you make me think of one of the lines I wrote down, you probably wrote down too. It's not up to you to determine what is the value, what is the value to the Empire, right? Mm-hmm. This episode's so much about finding your own value. And that's kind of the moment. You got this bleep in front of you driving that point home. This might be what happens. But yeah, I agree that it was a beautiful moment. Not the necessarily shooting, but just the ice vulture shadow,
mm-hmm.
the ice vulture screech. Subtitles were hilarious in this episode. A lot of that stuff. It was a well-earned moment.
Yeah. I also think it is just a thing to be, you know, aware of in storytelling of stories are they are constructed to make us feel a certain way. And we've been getting a lot of intriguing perspective thoughts between Bad Batch and Andor and where our sympathies lie with the character and why. And one thing I thought about, like, we aren't offered to feel anything sympathetic about Nolan. We don't get a quick phone call with his mom. You know, we're not offered anything to humanize him, which makes it easier to, you know, want Crosshair to assert himself in this way. But when I was thinking through this and feeling a little guilty, I was thinking about Cyril Karn.
I
think Cyril Karn would have behaved almost exactly the same as Nolan, capable of saying just as awful of things. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't have wanted Crosshair to shoot Cyril, because I've seen the other side of Cyril. I've seen something that makes me sympathetic to him. So even though he could do, I think he's capable of doing everything that Nolan did, I wouldn't want him shot.
Yeah, no, I really agree with that. Yeah, absolutely. Which is why, I thought, was it Crispin Freeman as Nolan was? I hated him from the first second, but yeah. Yeah, no. I get you there. But the big point, I was absolutely rooting for it. So I'm going to go look in the mirror and question myself.
No. Let's talk. You tried to start this positive, and then I was like, this is all about death. Get back to a little bit more of the breakthrough, that there is some change for Crosshair. And I think it is all about, you know, what you brought up right away, which is what is your value, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The idea of value is raised in a couple ways in the episode right away. You know, right away we got the clones being being retired when they don't want to. And Nolan keeps, you know, using value-based terms about the cargo and making it clear that it's more valuable than the clones' lives. And, you know, he calls it high-value cargo stored there. He talks about the clones as, you know, being upset that there are more clones on the mission, saying, I don't like used equipment. I think we're presented by the idea of value early on in that Lieutenant Nolan's value is pretty damn low. We don't know exactly how he got this position. He appears to be young, but he has no experience, no skill. All of his value just comes from sort of empty Empire rhetoric, right? I mean, Nolan says, in my experience, respect is something to be earned. Pushes back on Nolan and says, how many missions have you commanded? Mm-hmm. And the answer is, Zero. So there's a real contrast set up right away between the cargo, between Nolan and the clones, which I think sets us up to go on this real journey of being reminded of, you know, what is, besides the intrinsic value of all living beings,
mm-hmm.
what is the value of a clones and of clones, and how does it contrast with the mystery cargo and Lieutenant Nolan?
Yeah. Well, there's some, a lot of stuff, great stuff about Nolan there. The idea is, you know, talking about the value and man, he puts all this value in misplaced things, right? Misplaced is value, I should say, a position, station. Well, you can't have been, you know, you're out here. You must not be that great. And look at my fur on my beautiful new thing. So the emptiness of that, to really drive home the fact, again, you know, this cheap stormtrooper armor, by the way, we know it is, you know, not super effective in the history of Star Wars,
mm-hmm.
but probably cheap, mass produced, and he holds that as value over that. But just all these things driving the point home, because you got that great action sequence we go through, we'll talk about later, but it all ends up with the discovery of, yeah, it's just breastplates and helmets. So real point of view there through Nolan's eyes.
Yeah. And Nolan is such a great perspective of, you know, the empire, the dark side of, you know, when you ally yourself with kind of an authoritarian perspective that is always, you know, only really getting power by promoting fear and attacking another. When you ally yourself with them, you will always become the other, right? Like the clones were the heroes of the Republic. And some of Nolan's really specific language kind of othering them, right? Like, it's not just that they need to retire, that they're old, but like now in the Empire's view, they're a, you know, looked down upon other. Obviously, Palpatine, you know, did the manipulation of kind of blaming the mm-hmm. destruction of Kamino on their poor judgment to not push back against their corrupt mm-hmm. commander. But it's powerful to see like how quickly that has moved through Imperial ranks, that Nolan is basically kind of spouting this like stormtroopers are great, but you know, your used equipment, and the way he says clone at the end, like the it's not just that they're not valuable anymore. It's that they're an other, the existence of them is gross to Nolan because now they are the other that needs to be attacked.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's a great point. Yeah. His disgust is so effective just from the beginning. And it gets personal too. This is why your other question, like I've had that, you know, supervisors come by, do the inspection, you know, that guy's out of uniform. I had one part, it was 105 degree day at the Farmer's Market Grove in Hollywood. And they said, why is your guard standing in the shade? That's not where we were. Well, because it's 105 degrees out and you have him in a long sleeve, that uniform with a hat. Sorry. Yeah. And so I just, I think maybe to answer, this is maybe the answer. This is probably why I was rooting for Crosshair more than I maybe should have at the end.
That makes perfect sense, though, because that's very much aligned with what's going on in this episode of like, well, he has inherent value as a human and he doesn't need to be in the baking sun. And also you come through here, you're going to pop back into your air conditioned car and you judge this person working his ass off for less money than you.
You're out of uniform.
All right, back to value. So I really liked that value. The idea of value was set up in a couple ways, but then I think it really exploded in where Crosshair actually kind of changed and came to life. And we were joking at the top about his little but a couple times what they were like, that's the most positive noise Crosshair has made this entire show, right? Where he's waking up a little bit to like, I want to be a loner, but actually Mayday seems pretty cool. We actually kind of agree on a lot of things. So that bond between them, I think is really what starts to wake Crosshair up. What are your thoughts on his relationship with Mayday and how Crosshair kind of becomes more insistent on holding his own value?
No, I love it. I was looking down to the comedy whimsy section, so I'll borrow from that, mention it there again, because there wasn't a ton in this episode, but Crosshair has this wonderful delayed laugh to the shot Nolan takes, that Mayday says against Nolan.
Yeah.
And it's a great little beaten joke, but it's that delayed laugh and the laugh is from Crosshair. Combine that with him when he, you know, when Mayday's like, hey, I'm Mayday. And Crosshair kind of has another pause of, do I give him my designation number? No, all right, I'm Crosshair. I combine those moments of him, the ice melting, so to speak, though not around him, but in his heart. And it really built that connection well, down to the pressure mine, everything about it. Someone who has, I feel Mayday knows his value, even though he doesn't maybe fully understand how undervalued he is. And for Crosshair to see his connection, those helmets, right? All those moments, talk about death hanging over it. Yeah, I thought it was a very, again, earned moment and connection between them because of these little tiny acting details.
Yeah. Yeah, I love what you're saying. I feel like Crosshair, It, like we said, is clinging to ignoring change. He can be the same person he's always been on. Emissions, emission. The Bad Batch have really, you know, forced it away from him. There's to me, sadness in his, you know, response to Mayday of, you know, what happened to them. They're gone. They're gone from his life. Nobody wants to sit with him. Nobody wants to talk to him. Mm-hmm. The last clone we saw him have respect for, Cody, from Crosshair's perspective, pulled a Bad Batch on him. Said, this ain't it, and I'm leaving. And, you know, it's almost a joke, but like, has Crosshair had a conversation with the clone brother since then?
Right, right.
Or is it just like, I don't want to talk to any of them because they're all going to be like that, you know? Mm-hmm. They'll seem like they're good soldiers who follow orders.
Yeah.
Who keep their heads down and do what's got to be done. But they're eventually going to come at me with that same BS that, you know, my brothers did and Cody did. So I feel like there's this really like, I've decided I can just make it alone. I don't need to have friends. And then Mayday's just awesome at every turn. And he's like, God, got to be friends with him.
I like this guy. I like this guy. But again, this is why I go back to this thing. I'm on. Like, I'm glad this wasn't Echo. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't Wrecker. It was something new, and it's something in this idea of like what you're saying of like, you know, I don't need them. I don't, you know, everyone, they're just gonna bad batch me. That's a great way to look at it. Of him trying to convince himself of this and not facing the fear, and fear of the fear will hold you back, I guess you could say. So no, I think it was very effective to go this way.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it is because it's not somebody coming at him saying he's wrong. It's somebody he can respect because it's somebody who's doing what he's doing, right? They're like, though the conditions are horrible, he's putting his head down and he's getting the job done, right? Mm-hmm. So that's in snarking back at the, you know, stupid Lieutenant Nolan who doesn't know what he's talking about. And Crosshair still is distant, right? The lines that right. become ironic, right? Of Crosshair, they come across the dead Raider, and Crosshair says, "No point in carrying dead weight." And Mayday says, "Remind me not to die in your watch," which of course mm-hmm. becomes ironic as Crosshair does carry Mayday's weight. So I think there's that Crosshair sees himself in Mayday, but Mayday is kind of still alive and still knows his value. Mm-hmm. But there's this other element to me that I feel like almost everything that Mayday does is a checklist of what is a good soldier, right? We've heard the we're good soldiers, we followed orders is a real belief that like mm-hmm. that Rex and many other clones tried to hold up in the Clone Wars animated series, right? Mm-hmm. We've heard it is a mind control dogma forced on them in the immediate aftermath of Order 66 or in the action of Order 66, right? Of, you know, when the chips flare up with the Bad Batch, they say that is a mm-hmm. almost hypnotized mantra, right? Of something they're being forced to believe.
Yeah.
This is, obviously Mayday at the end says this, you know, after all we've done, we've sacrificed, we're good soldiers, we followed orders. He's saying it is a belief, right? And his actions, right? He cares about his squad mates. They matter. It matters that they served and they died. He mourns them. He assigns value to Crosshair's life by saving him from the mine. He shows ingenuity in working with limited tech, right? I've learned to improvise. I guess all clones have had to since the war. He shows valor in sacrifice by pushing Crosshair out of the way of the avalanche. So for me, like any sort of list you could make of like, what really does make a good, honorable soldier, a squad mate, a clone? Mayday is just like displaying one thing after another that makes it impossible for Crosshair to not see his value.
This is great stuff. And you're right to point out all of this. It was very clear down to the avalanche push, the skills of the mind, all everything. But yes, it's a checklist of everything Crosshair's believed in and said he is himself. And it's also, it's done with respect too, right? Mm-hmm. At least in my mind, you know, Mayday's a good character. And this is what we were. We didn't think about the war ending because this is who we were. And I found my value in that. So I think it's handled with respect. But it's just the trivial nature of what they're protecting is it's so out there in the open for you to point at and go, ouch. That, yeah, like you said something there about Crosshair kind of sees himself in him. That's the connection, but then sees the value, sees where it's all headed. And that just drives it all home.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really think that walking through that with Crosshair, seeing this value of Mayday. Mayday's a very likable character, I think.
Yeah, totally.
So to see all of that value, and also just like the strength and the bond to fight through that snow, mm-hmm. that wind with no helmet his skin is not right. Trust me. Mm-hmm. By the time Crosshair gets back there, to have us see and feel all of that value,
mm-hmm.
Mayday's creativity, his valor, his compassion. Ever since that first broadcast episode of Clone Wars, where Yoda says, "You're all unique. You have intrinsic value. You're living beings." All of that value just being wiped away by Nolan is, I think, what triggered such fury in me.
Yeah.
And what broke Crosshair, right? Of like that sputtering, but he'll die. You know, Crosshair isn't big with words. I don't think he's writing an essay or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just the like it's so apparent to Crosshair that Mayday has huge amounts of value, intrinsic value and skill and honor and experience, and you're just saying it's not there.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's what he's saying with the "but he'll die, you know.
Yeah. No, look, it could be a little bit, go with me here, a little bit of something that you don't fully appreciate till you experience it. You can hear people could tell you, I think he's probably, you know, Bad Batch leaves here. This ain't right. We're going this way. And Crosshair goes, no, I'm sticking with my job. I'm sticking with what I'm doing. I'm sticking with who I am. What are you all doing? You're leaving me again. Like I said earlier, Bad Batch, they're the ones that changed. I'm still me. And it's like, that's the problem. But sometimes even with the bigger picture, this is going back to what I was saying earlier, but sometimes you just got to be allowed to change. You got to be given the grace to go through that journey. Unfortunately, we don't, until it slaps us in the face or we experience it or someone we know experiences something, then you don't fully understand until that moment some of your choices or your beliefs or your decisions. And I think this checklist that the Mayday checklist, a hero of the Republic, doing his job, doing it well. They're an action team. And at the end of that, this is what he gets. It becomes like this episode is very personal, intimate for Crosshair. And that's sometimes, unfortunately, but sometimes what we all need.
Yeah, he had to really, really feel it and see it to, you know, finally, you know, stand up and scream that I have value. The clones have value. Yeah. And does it with a laser bolt. I think there is this interesting question of value that goes on, too, because obviously Crosshair is falls unconscious. Mm-hmm. Clearly, stormtroopers who no longer have a lieutenant or a commander. I'm sure there's falls to a stormtrooper in command who has to call somebody and go, "What? So this happened. What should I do?" And somebody says, "Crosshair has value. So bring him to us. He's only alive because the Imperial cloners think he has some kind of value." So I'm curious what your thoughts are on that, and then I do want to have some fun speculating of what we think that value is.
I was going to the end there. You the value of Crosshair is a
well. I'm curious what you think about that idea of like he has fought for the idea that he has value, and then he's sort of saved from just being left out there to freeze by the fact that the cloners want to manipulate his value. They didn't save him because, like, you know, you're right. Clones do have value and he's a beautiful person. They saved him because they're going to keep using him as Imperial equipment in some way. So I was curious how you felt about that.
Yeah, it's potentially very tragic. That ending for me was other than, you know, the reveal and, you know, we're moving on to some other, you know, bigger, this tied with Omega and Alice and all the stuff. Like we're getting end game here. So that was exciting just in terms of a fan, but I potentially tragic of just when you discover here's who I am. And who knows what his mind's going to be. Is he going to have any agency over his path forward? Is it too far where the change came too late, but maybe it's in your heart. That's all the stuff running through my head. If that answers anything of you, it was extra tragic to me. I didn't want him to die. I didn't think he was going to die. But you know, there was no, he fights his way out and comes limping back to the Marauder, right? At least not yet. It's really tragic that, the empire determines your value. And now we're determining this is your new path. And you once again have no say in that. How's he going to pull out of that? How's that going to, is he going to be rescued? Is he going to be changed? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there's so much that treats him as imperial property, including Nolan's literal lines, right? And the fact that he's only saved because he still has value as imperial property is, hey, he's alive. There's still hope. He can still be, the Ice Vulture. He can find a way to survive. But also, how is he going to respond to the fact that he's now very clear that he's not just a good soldier keeping his head down, that he's property that is only being used, you know, as a tool by people who have zero respect for him or his kind.
Zero respect indeed.
So then on the more, what's going to happen next plot wise? Why do you think he has, it is that same doctor on Mount Tantus, Emery Carr, I believe. What do you think they want out of him? Do you think they want genetic material to continue studies on clones who turned out different? Or do you think they're going to try to utilize him to track down the Bad Batch in Omega?
I think that now this might become the tracking down of Omega and Bad Batch, which is, again, I think an earned story point for me. That would feed well from last week's ending, right? So I think that's the direction we're going. I also, there's some part of me that's like, why wouldn't you also take he's really good. Let's take his DNA and I don't know. Maybe it's next phase of the Dark Troopers, Pershing somewhere in the back with notes. I don't know. But I don't necessarily think thematically that's less exciting to me than what you're talking about. And now Crosshair, if he has this, control over any part of his heart, soul, and mind going forward, how does this new him interact with his old friend?
Yeah, I can see Hemlock having like a real manipulative sit down with him, since Hemlock is a little bit more of a sweet talker, right?
He's a talker.
And Hemlock could be like, you've got a raw deal. We'll set you up with everything you want. One last mission, that I'm really intrigued. And it could be both. It could be like, hey, we got a mission for you. Also, we took a bunch of new DNA again. Don't worry about it.
Don't ask questions.
Yeah. Any other big picture thoughts before we take a break?
No, I think we hit them all there. It's funny. There's a lot of action, but a lot of things we're going to talk about, I think, still feed very much so into the big picture, but, all of it, worked out so well. So I think I'm just, notes are good. We're good.
Notes are good. We're all good here. We have talked about value and Ice Vultures. We're not done talking about Ice Vultures, so we'll be back in a moment with a lot more Ice Vulture content.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
And we are back to continue our discussion of episode 12 of season 2 of The Bad Batch, The Outpost. We talked about some of the big ideas. We're going to get into some of the details. There were some action moments in this episode. Ken, did you have some favorites?
Yes, I did. I always have these like weird action moments. So in terms of watching ships landing and that action, a rival to Barton Fork was one of my favorites. Love the choice that, you know, it reminds me of Rogue One when we saw the Death Star quote upside down, but really probably right side up. And it just kind of love playing with that a little bit there. It's not all 2D Mario running forward towards the captain. And I just like the ship going in and the angle looking down on it and the design, again, the music, the sound design, the images, beautiful stuff. And if landing ships landing is action in Clone Wars and Rebels and Bad Batch, this is one of the best ones.
Ton of great taking off and landing. Yeah. It made you feel like this is not a fun place to be.
Yeah.
This is not going to be a rewarding mission. No.
Love it. Yeah.
I like the stun grenade. I'm sure we've seen them before, but it was fun to see, you know, we've seen the droid poppers, the electricity. It was fun to see the just, the shocking organics, grenade was cool to see.
Yeah.
There was a lot of buildup and tension in heading toward action. I really liked in the Mayday and Crosshair taking on the group. I really liked Mayday's classic action roll into shooting position.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're both so good. And going back to you talking earlier about the good soldier, they're both who you want to play in the video games.
Yeah.
Play as. They love that. Love a lot of that stuff there.
Yeah, and even Mayday's kind of cocky about it. It's like, yeah, we can get him.
Oh yeah, no, which is certainly part of it, right? Again, Mayday knows his value. He knows his value. He knows what he can do.
Yeah, I shouldn't even say cocky. It's we have a lot of experience and skills that are hard earned. We've trained and we have experience. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what are some other action moments for you?
I went a little earlier. There was the sequence with the Raiders first attacking and the ambush and you know, got Vetch dining the explosion, you see it through the infrared, but that whole sequence, the explosion, the ringing in Crosshair's ear, ripping off his helmet, shooting the Raider after that. It was, you know, it's an action sequence. It's kind of fun, but it just had a lot of great purpose to it. A lot of questions where I'm like, what, how much is that just, it's ringing in his ears and that's the moment. How much of, you know, I know his chip is out. I know that, but how much is just trauma connected? Who knows what he's going through? It was a real, I thought, purposeful moment. Because I already know Crosshair's go with the gun. Like his name's Crosshair. I've seen his face. So it was beyond that. And I just thought it was a real emotional beat in the action.
Yeah, no, it I think it helped to get us into feeling with him and for him. Right. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times he's cold and cool. Right. And he takes an impossible shot from far away and he doesn't faze him emotionally at all. You know, does the toothpick mean anything emotionally? Who knows? He's a cool customer. So to see him rattled, right, to have that flare in his eye and feel pain gets us in a mood of really feeling what he's feeling.
Right. Totally. No, I love that. Yeah.
Yeah. Great one. What are some other ones?
Just go. There was the bigger action sequence, like you said, and a lot of stuff in it. And then there was Crosshair had a sniper shot on the raider trying to leave with the shipment cart out of the cave. And it was particularly brutal. And again, this, you know, that you talk often the tension of Star Wars. It was one of those, oh, that was a great shot. You know, that was, he moved the scope in and it was brutal. And, you know, we don't spend a lot of time with the Raiders. We don't know what they're raiding for and what cause. And I get that. And sometimes people want that in every bit of content. Understand it. I love that stuff, but it's not the point of this episode. And I just thought Crosshair, it's a reminder because we haven't spent a lot of time with Crosshair and he's damn good.
He's damn good. No, I wrote that line, that moment down too, because it was like the constant with the animated series of like, okay, here's the goofy guy who has a Scottish voice for some reason, yeah, you know, or here's a real silly droid, you know, and then wow, and then the clone being brutally murdered. Okay, what age group is this for again? this was definitely one of those moments of like, whoa, wow, cool, but like. The second time I watched, it's like, did I imagine that? And I paused to make sure that I didn't. Straight blaster bolt straight through the head in almost John Wick level of violence.
Yeah.
It goes by fast. I'm not criticizing it, but it was both cool and like, damn, not messing around this episode.
Yeah, no, and look, you know, yeah, not a criticism at all, but I go the other way where it's like, again, I don't connect with everything in animation. I've talked about that before. I'm not a giant Pixar fan. I acknowledge their greatness, but I don't sit down with them a lot. I totally get it. But I have some friends who are like, I don't know, animation, cartoons. And they're not quite saying kid stuff. But I just want to go to this episode and be like, kid stuff? Look, this is the adult Star Wars you might be craving that you just haven't found yet.
Yeah, do you think animation is just to sell toys? Well, check out Raider on the Cart.
Yeah,
with head wound. Yeah. It was really, really powerful. And I think the choice of the Raiders is interesting because we don't know who they are. We don't know what they want. They are locals. You know, we know this is an Imperial and sometimes Republic story. Was their life, their balance on that planet disrupted? Are they stealing that gear because they need it to stay alive too? You know, I thought it was interesting that they had some clone armor on with their bandages and Mayday had added some of their bandaging to his armor. So it's very, very subtle, but I did feel like visually it was a little bit like here are two camps in hellish conditions and powers above them have set them against one another for almost empty reasons, you know?
Yeah, I like that.
And they're almost visually coming together a little bit, but we see that, but they don't get the opportunity to see that.
Yeah, yeah. No, I could follow you on that one pretty easily there. I like that.
Yeah. And you know, the Raiders could just, they could be like, yeah, we came to this planet and we're, you know, stealing stuff and we've got villages we're harassing. Or they could be totally like, yeah, we see their point. And I don't think the episode entirely tells us either way.
Well, yeah. And look, good soldiers follow orders in an episode to weigh the why of those orders. So that's fair too.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I think for me, the other action moment I went to is just the avalanche itself is just
100%. Yeah.
Terrible and beautiful and everything about it, the rushing and Crosshair's choking and the big shot from above of the sort of the plume of snow smoke rising up. You know, all the way up to just that great genre shot of Crosshair's hand bursting from the snow.
I love everything you describe, and I put down too, especially that shot that you pull back and you get the full scope of it. Beautiful. Again, you're right. We can say it every week if we want. Just beautiful.
Yeah. So that's about it for me for kind of pulling specific action moments out. Anything else for you?
No, I think that was about it. Unless you count the shot on Nolan, which I like even the way that was. That was shot there too as well. But yeah, there were a lot of big, wonderful sequences and set pieces, the avalanche, the infiltration. One of the things I love, I can't remember if I've said this before in an episode of Bad Batch Report. They do such a good job, more than I think in Clone Wars, or maybe as Clone Wars got better with the tech and the ability to do things got better. When the Bad Batch, but particularly Crosshair, like grabs his weapon and just carries it. I'm not talking about firing it, carries it. The sounds, the clicks, everything. So good. And there's just something I love about it the attention to the detail from the acting of throwing the toothpick away Wrecker last week with the, you and I were talking about that. So many people reacted in that moment, but just the sound design of just the weapons being carried, the gear. I love the detail in this.
Yeah, absolutely. The snow foley was really, really good. It was not just, we've got one crunch and when ambiguous one crunch for all, it there was lots of different sound of snow, which was really great.
Yeah, indeed.
And I agree with you that I liked how just sort of like blank and sudden and not glorified or glamorized that the shooting of Nolan was. It was just, fast and perfunctory.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Going from that to comedy and whimsy. This was not an episode that had wackiness as its goal, right? But there were still some lines that made me, if not chuckle, make a crosshair noise.
Yeah.
So where'd you go?
Well, it starts for, it really sets you up for who Nolan is. Not that we needed any help, but him landing, slipping on the ice, and then immediately going, you guard the ship because he's embarrassed, says everything you need to know. And I thought that was really funny.
Yeah. No, yeah. And the blaming it on the clone was great. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I liked Mayday's kind of introductory line of, you must be our reinforcements. We expected you 36 rotations ago. Did you get lost?
Mayday's is great.
What else? What other Mayday zingers did you enjoy?
Well, so we talked about it already, but we should highlight the delayed humph, but also from Mayday's line, but the pressure mine beat too of pressure mine.
Yeah, I really liked the, once Mayday has made it clear, like, you're going to have to earn my respect. Never been on a mission, Nolan. And there is that great tension, right? Of like, all of Nolan's authority is structural. It is, it is agreed upon socially. It's not physically real, which I think is also a part of the tension of Crosshair finally shooting him, of like, your power is granted by everybody around here's agreement that you have power. You are surrounded by people who have more physical power than you. Anyway, which I thought of again, because we talked about these early scenes with Mayday pushing back on Nolan. But I like it when Nolan leaves and Mayday kind of opens up and goes, hey, so what did you do to get stuck with this mission? And Crosshair says, just lucky, I guess.
Great.
As close to Crosshair gets to a zinger.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's really livening up.
Yep. And I think the final one for me, I liked it when Mayday has improvised the solution on the mine. He's going around the corner and Crosshair says, glad you're confident in your work. And Mayday, I'm confident. I'm just not stupid. This is just some great buddy banter.
Buddy banter, soldier humor. No, I love that. I love that. My final submission is one that you're always just so good at with the screenshot. So I hope, if people are listening to this, I'm not stepping on it because maybe you'll already put it in the promotional. But I had the subtitles on for the second viewing and just raiders trilling, ice vultures screeching. It's just, it never stops making me laugh.
The raider trilling was some great weirdness, right? Of just like, we don't know much about these creatures. They're head shape and eyes had a little bit of a Mimban vibe. I'm not saying they're Mimbanese, but they got the interesting bandaging. We don't know who they are, but we know they're a little different because they trill.
Yes. Good trilling.
Good trilling, Raiders. Mm-hmm. All right. We are going to move on then, unless you have anything else.
No, this is a rip roaring funny episode. I'll tell you that much.
A lot of yucks and death. We're going to move on to another normal section of our podcast that is sometimes bursting with content and sometimes cold and barren like a snowy landscape. And I find it a little cold and barren this week. We like to talk about Star Wars canon, lore, connections to other stories. Only a couple little things for me. You mentioned it early on. Mayday says he's been stationed there for over a year watching this cargo, which turns out to be this proto stormtrooper armor, I guess,
right?
First generation stormtrooper now. How did that not to disappear into the timeline wars? Because I think Bad Batch is, you know, hey, we know exactly when it starts. We don't know exactly how much time has passed by the time we get to this
right.
period. Is this 3 months after Revenge of the Sith? Is this 2 years? We don't know exactly.
But did
hearing a year affect you? Does it speak to how long, you know, this project, this plan, War Mantle has been, the Stormtrooper project has been in the works for Palpatine?
Yeah, it did. It goes to this, our longstanding joke of Palpatine's ready with new clothes, outfits, curtain colors, and plans. And he's taken pitches from the office, right? I'm sure Rampart had something to do with it. You know, I love all of it. I don't love it. Clones and the Empire. But yeah, it does speak to Palpatine as contingencies just pouring out of his evil pores.
Yeah. Yeah. So I really agree with you with full acknowledgement of, hey, a good chunk of time has passed. Maybe this isn't that much of a revelation, but I kind of like the idea that Palpatine is like maybe halfway through the Clone Wars and these clones got names, they got tattoos. Some of them are deserting, they got attitude. And he's like, well, I need them.
Yeah.
But as soon as Order 66 is done, I'm not putting up with that. You know, I bred these people. It's his ongoing attempt, like we talked about with the Zilla Beast episode, to try to control the natural, and he can't.
Yeah.
So I like the idea that he's like, the second I get my empire declared, I'm doodling up some new armor drawings.
Well, it's also, you've highlighted before, we talking to Anakin, about the Jedi Relentless and Kenobi, and he holds these grudges. He doesn't let anything go. Padme, all that stuff, and just including the clothes. They've got tattoos. What are, they got names? What is this? What is it?
Do you remember that one, Fives?
Fives almost ruined it for us.
Yeah. He could have ruined everything. Yeah. No. They gotta go. Yeah. So that was a fun bit of canon speculation. Mm-hmm. My last other two canon things are just reaching. We got nice Vulture. We got nice Spider. Mm-hmm. I feel like there is a growing thing happening where sometimes these creatures or characters will, you know, be named the next week when a fact file fun thing comes out on StarWars.com or there's a new entry to the StarWars.com databank and you find out, oh, the thing called in ice whatever is actually this. But I think there's also a just like, you know what, we don't need a name for everything. It will merge eventually vibe. Do you feel like that's what's going on this episode? Are you cool with that? What are your thoughts?
I'm totally cool with it. Other than the jokes, I do love ice blanks. Love that. No, not needed. I called them the anti-convores earlier, but if they were, you know, Vulture Roars or something, it's I don't need it. It was an art piece for me.
Yeah. The Frigidaires.
Yeah.
That's just a refrigerator. Anyway.
Frigisaurs.
The Frigisaurs. Yeah. There we go. Ice Vulture, Ice Spider. What ice creature do you need next in Star Wars?
I want to hear like an ice hippopotamus come roaring into the scene.
It's an ice hippo.
Yeah. Yeah.
A symbol of life.
Yeah. That's what I need.
I would like that very much. This is my final bit of canon thoughts, Ken. And this isn't even Star Wars canon. We're going to pivot to Cheers canon. Rhea Perlman is in this show, is Sid. We've got a little bit of Cheers there. Of course, John Ratzenberger playing a Major Brent Derlin in Empire Strikes Back. We've got some Cheers canon there. In Cheers, the owner of the bar, Sam Malone, is Sam Mayday Malone. Is the name of this clone yet more Cheers canon coming into Star Wars?
I'm prepared to accept that as the answer. I think Ted Danson would play a great, Imperial officer at some point, maybe one who just does his heart's not in it anymore. So I'm leaving that open. But yeah, I'll accept that. Absolutely accept that.
Yeah. I just want even more Cheers in Star Wars. So I was happy to really stretch to see if that's possibly a Cheers reference.
Yeah, absolutely.
Was there anything else that you picked up on? I really felt like this was such a limited, focused episode that there wasn't a bunch of other details.
It's maybe more on the lore side in terms of just troop collectors. But I did like Nolan's outfit, the version, the very Imperial officer, tank gunner, attic commander, snow gear vibe. And I know, and I'm still a fan of that stuff in the toys and everything. So again, that's not canon or lore, but it's just kind of, and I don't know if you've seen that exact model, so to speak, before, but I liked it.
Yeah, that combination of helmet, chest plate, fur.
Yeah, it was like a little, because I love those range troopers in Solo. I've talked about that a lot in the past, but it had that vibe. And also just, because he looks sharp, right? He looks sharp. And in his head, he's like, I look so in command today. But he's just, the fact that he's not, it just drove the point home.
Yeah, no, I really agree. That's got me thinking, maybe this is canon. Maybe this is the beginning of snow troopers. Like, I know we have some clones who are equipped for snow, right? Equipped for it. But do some of these early stormtroopers go, we really need a division that's built for this?
I think that's a great, actually, I think that's a great fun headcanon thing there was varied clones. We know that. And I think so far we've only seen kind of the basics. And I think, I think there could definitely be something about that. I don't need that explore, but I just would love that someone's like, can we have like a snow cape? It's getting cold out here.
Come on.
Again, going to Nolan's outfit of just like, I'm sure he and his young academy roommate, Maximilian Veers, are comparing, commander outfits. And yeah, I just love all that.
Yeah. Like the wind's really going up the open necks. Can we please have some neck closure?
Love that.
Right into the nostril the wind goes. Mm-hmm. Come on. I suppose we should, I'm sure we've talked about it before because they've appeared before, but these Stormtroopers Mark One, Generation One, do look, have some similarities to Macquarie's original Stormtrooper concept art. And that's fun.
Yeah, I love that.
Was there anything that you disliked or questioned in this episode of The Bad Batch?
Not at all. The ending, the beat at the end, which is great, and going back to Tantus and really drives the story to its conclusion probably in the season. I do like. I want to be clear about that. But I almost was bummed that wasn't like next week. It was a creative choice, and I love this episode. Like a 10 out of 10 for me. But my first viewing, stuff in my food in my mouth, I was just like, oh, that was a great episode. Oh, what, it's still going? Oh, okay, I don't know about that. Like, go move that to next week. I gotta process what's going on.
That would have been quite the emotional cliffhanger if it was just sort of like some confused stormtroopers going, what do we do?
Yeah. And it's no more takes only this because that it's a fun thing, and I don't want anyone to think I don't love that. I'm not wondering what's next week's episode. I'm probably gonna watch them right after we're done recording, to be clear. But like, I don't want that to be the conversation. I want the conversation. What are the lessons of Crosshair? But that's not fun on Twitter. So it's all going to be, what do you think they're going to do? Like, and it should be that way. You've asked that. We've asked that. I've asked. But like, that was my only beat of just like, I don't need this right now. I'm dealing with Crosshair.
I'm dealing with other things. I think I liked it because it made the tragedy complete, right?
Totally. Thematically. Yeah,
that he's saved, but only saved because, I think helped me feel so strongly about how successfully the show made me put me in Crosshair's shoes, his boots, his armor, and maybe made me feel his plight of being not valued intrinsically or for his skills, but now just being valued as a piece of meat, is property. Mm-hmm. Is the fact that on my screener, right when he was deciding to shoot Nolan, the words property of Disney came up over Crosshair.
There is a built-in tension, isn't there?
There's a built-in tension, not making any shocking criticism here. But we've joked a lot about how the screeners have your email emblazoned on them in the center the entire time. And every once in a while, property of Disney pops up. And it was just as he was like, I have value. I'm not property.
All right.
Yeah, all rights reserved. And we still need him for some storytelling. So he's going to Mount Tantus. Is there anything that we haven't talked about that you wanted to touch on?
No, all good.
Yeah, the only thing for me is just to call out, I really liked that circle of helmets that Mayday had honoring the fallen clones. That helped drive everything home. It was just a really nice touch.
Agreed, yeah.
All right, on to our fun final question. If you could have a figure or merch of anything from this episode, who or what do you want?
I tell you what, I want a Mayday figure. I loved the design of his outfit. And like you said, it takes maybe from the land and combines it with what he is. I really, really, really loved that. It was a great design. You know, there was vibes, Dengar vibes, if you want to look at it that way. But I didn't take it that way. But I want that figure.
Yeah, and it was almost like this is what it takes to hold my armor together at this point, or or I've been here so long, I'm sort of becoming a part of this place. There's a lot of neat ways to take it, and it aesthetically so cool. Yeah, and man, does Hasbro love to make troops with a slight variation, so I think we have some hopes for Mayday. For me, we often talk about the cinema scenes, late 90s, early 2000s. You would get the action figure packs with three characters and then a little cardboard sort of backing of the scene. I want a cinema scene of Crosshair, Nolan, and an ice vulture.
just a rubbery ice vulture you can fly above. Yep.
Yep. Relive the trauma at home, kids. Be the first on your block. That's what I want.
Do it. That's great.
All right, that is our big look at The Outpost, a brutal but really great episode of The Bad Batch. We are heading toward the end. For full transparency to our listeners, the screeners time out very soon. So we're going to watch the episodes 13 and 14. We're going to record our episodes. And then the final two episodes, we will be watching at the Midnight Experience. And covering it all. Midnight Experience with two episodes of Bad Batch and an episode of Mandalorian.
We'll see. We'll see what's going to happen that week. Bear with us. It's going to be fun. It's a lot of Star Wars, and that ain't a bad thing.
No, it's a very, very thrilling time, but that is it. So, Ken, you want to let people know where they can find us?
I would love to. We're on Twitter, Force Center Pod. We're on Facebook at Force Center Podcast, Hive Social if you're over there. And, where else are we at? Oh, yeah, Instagram. A lot of stuff going on Instagram. Check out our reels there, but also check out YouTube. Subscribe over there so you don't miss shorts, live shows, essays, all those kind of things. A new small piece coming out tomorrow if you're listening at the time of release. On the YouTube channel, follow us there. Also, you can get podcasts anywhere, Acast, Apple Podcasts, just search. You'll find us merch available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. And don't forget, you can support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter. We want to thank you all for helping us reach one of our immediate goals on Patreon. The live Star Wars ranked is coming soon. Stand by for that. And a new goal will be announced shortly. You can follow me at Ken Napsok. Go to my website, kennapsok.com. Joseph, where can they find and follow you?
Yeah, you can find me on all the social media as at Joseph Scrimshaw. I am on Twitter. I'm on Instagram. A lot of friends are following me over there on Instagram, so find me on Instagram. Also on Mastodon, and in particular on YouTube. I'm putting some of my not unboxing videos up on YouTube as YouTube Shorts, and I'm working towards some more comedy shorts and some more short films. If you haven't checked out my short film, Unboxing the Cosmos, it is a short cosmic horror film. And it's about 12 minutes long. It's got some comedy and it's got some darkness. So if you want to check that out, I would love for it to get to 1,000 views, getting close. Thank you to everyone who has watched it. That is it for me. And that is it for this episode. So for myself, for Ken, for the absolute value of the good soldier Mayday, this has been the Bad Batch Report.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter.
Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.